What a wonderful privilege for me. I appreciate Brother Wright's prayer this as we open up the service. The elders at Main Street have been so wonderful to us in our work, and I enjoyed so much our time when we were there working with the congregation. I appreciate the elders here and for the encouragement they gave me. And of course, we want to continue to remember Brother Dale's family in our prayers. But we are so thankful to have this moment in time where we can be here together. We kicked it off Sunday with this thought. We looked at the Apostle Peter, and you know, when Peter was what I would call a rookie disciple, you know, he said to the Lord, not me, you know, others might deny you, but not me, you know, and that's after Jesus had already told him, you know, every one of you are going to leave me, you're going to forsake me. And Jesus' statement was prophetic. It wasn't pessimistic, because there was going to be a serious comeback by these men. And then we went into 1 Peter, and 1 Peter, I know it's kind of an old saying, we don't use it today as much, but you know, Peter says, walk the talk, which is significant, because in light of the cock crowing three times and knowing that he had denied Jesus Christ, he went from there to writing a book whose theme is walk the talk. And he said, you should always be ready to give a defense of why you believe what you believe. I mean, just an amazing turnaround and comeback. But his book throws out this living hope that we have, where we live the truth and defend the truth. And so each night, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I just want to share aspects of this. This is a wonderful realm that we live in, is the kingdom of God. And yet there are challenges that come our way from the outside and the inside. And so tomorrow night, I want to talk about one of the great rewards. And the way I'm going to do it is by announcing my title tomorrow night, and that's What's on Your Bucket List. And we'll talk about that. But tonight, I'd like to begin by reading you a book that I just finished reading, just an excerpt from it, entitled How Evil Works. For centuries, we considered sex to be sacred, reserved exclusively for a man and a woman joined permanently by marriage vows. And all other forms and circumstances of sexual expression were forbidden, certainly not natural. Then with stunning rapidity, all that unraveled. The change first emerged into public view during the heady, intoxicating 1960s under the banner of sexual revolution. Half a century later, it's as though some of us have sneaked up to Pandora's box and killed the gods and broke the locks and have exploded the lid wide open, just blew it up. The sexual genie is now running wild, transforming our society. And we have progressed beyond free sex to homosexual marriages and sexting and middle school hookups and transgender parades where people are walking with surgically mutilated bodies. Also, an ever-increasing tolerance of child sex. And you go, what do you mean by that? Well, let me just read you these couple of stats. In one study of 225 cases of teacher sex abuse in New York State, although all the accused had admitted to sexually abusing a student, not one was reported to the police, and only 1% lost their license to teach. Unencumbered predators. Still another study reports that many school districts make confidential agreements with abusers, essentially trading a positive recommendation for a resignation. In one case, a Seattle educator named Luke Markerstrom for the last 10 years has been reported on in abusing students, and they finally got him to hush up and paid him an extra $69,000 and then got rid of him. In recent years, there has been a seeming expanse of female teachers having sex with underage boys. And you know what one judge says? Oh, well, you know, he can just consider himself lucky that day. And one psychologist says, yeah, but what about the next day and the next day and the next day when that young man continues to want one-night stands and gets into pornography? And then what kind of father will he become? None of the repercussions are discussed whatsoever. He goes on to say, and I'll close with this reading of what he had. This man's name is David Kopelian. He says, to illustrate the difference between humans and animals, let me mention that my children raise goats as a hobby. They have a male goat to breed with various females. Although the buck is just a few months old, it readily mates with various females, old, young, big, small, it doesn't matter. They come into heat and he does his job. Everything's as it should be. Now, if that is all the humans are, animals, then we too should be able to just walk around doing the same thing. And the truth is that we are not just animals. An animal nature, yes, we have, that eats and procreates, but also a spiritual and eternal soul that survives this life. C.S. Lewis said, and this has stayed with me through the years, you, talking about human beings, you don't have a soul. You are a soul. We have a body. I want my flesh to reign is the thinking of our society of today, isn't it? You know, I was standing at the coast of Africa, and it's significant because at the tip of Africa where I was born, Cape Town, it's where the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean meet. And I was standing there one day, and I put my mind through an exercise. I soaked up what was happening. The two oceans were meeting. The waves were crashing against the cliff, and there was, all the spray was going up, and you could smell the salt, you know, and there was a whale in the distance coming in and out of the water, splashing in and splashing out, just a magnificent. And I thought to myself, this was an accident. And then I said to myself, how ridiculous that I could believe that this wasn't, that there wasn't an intelligent designer behind this. In his book, The New Atheism and the Erosion of Freedom, Robert Moray points out the seven leaps atheists have to explain. Number one, everything ultimately came from nothing. Number two, order came from chaos. Number three, harmony came from discord. Number four, life came from non-life. Five, reason came from irrationality. Six, personality came from non-personality. Seven, morality came from amorality. I want you to know that this thing, which is what atheism is doing, is leading us down this path for many people in our culture. I just want you to know that this is recent. Because the scientists of old would laugh at this kind of thinking. I decided to go back and just think about Copernicus. He said the world has been built for us by the best and most and most creative mind. Galileo said, God is known by nature and his works and by doctrine in his revealed word. Pasteur said, the more I study nature, the more I stand amazed at the work of the Creator. Isaac Newton said, and I quote, when I look at the solar system, I see the earth at the right distance from the sun to receive the proper amounts of heat and light. This did not happen by chance. And one person said, you take a dandelion, you know that dandelion, you just blow it up in the air, you know. There is more in that dandelion that happens than putting all of our current computers together. So how do we react to this? I'm not telling you anything new. You know our world has changed. It's just unbelievable. So here we are. We are children of God, and yes, we are to defend the faith. I know that we must do that. But how? What are the things that we need to embrace to make ourselves stronger, where we can stand, and where the next generation coming up can see that we're not wavering? You know, this is our truth. This is truth, and we will stand by it no matter how people change. So what are the things that we're going to do? And that's what I want to share with the balance of my thoughts tonight. Number one, we need to embrace wisdom. The psalmist said that the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 15, in talking about we need to embrace wisdom, says, blessed are those who find wisdom, those who gain understanding, for she is more profitable than all the silver and the gold. better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. And when I talk about wisdom, I'm not talking about intelligence that can solve mathematical calculations or that can solve memory tests. I'm talking about a wisdom that can answer questions to know what, when, and how to do something and why it is worth doing. One does not have to be... Listen, you don't have to be a genius, and I'm not, and so I'm glad for this statement I'm going to make. You don't have to be a genius to be successful and to be happy in life. All you have to do is make the right choices. And when you embrace the wisdom of God, you're going to make right choices. Oh yes, you're going to be faced with suffering and problems and difficulties that everybody else of the human condition faces because of sin. But the point is, the direction of your life and the decisions you make are going to be in light of God's word, your creator, and you are not going to go wrong. I don't know if any of you saw Dr. Graham M. Adams, who is our new Surgeon General of the United States. And he was talking about how he had been impacted by the life of Dr. Ben Carson. Dr. Ben Carson, you all know, ran for president, a prolific brain surgeon. I'll never forget years ago when I followed him when he declared for the presidency, and he was on MSNBC with Chris Matthews, and Chris Matthews was wanting to, you know, I think belittle him a little bit and say, well, listen, what do you know about politics? And his response, Dr. Ben Carson, was, well, it's not exactly brain surgery, you know. And this young man said he listened to Dr. Carson and was impacted by him. And in his statement a few days ago in being made the Surgeon General, said, my success in life was, yes, influenced by Dr. Ben Carson, but then I had to make the right choices. He says, I'm a doctor today and my brother's in prison. He's explaining the power of choice. And so the first degree of wisdom is knowing what values to live by. Who is wise, James 3:13, and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. You see, values are guardrails, man, that keep you on the road. How many people's lives have been saved on a highway, you know, where there's been guardrails and it's at night and maybe an 18-wheeler comes towards you, and although it's still on, you know, he's still on his side of the road, yet you're kind of blinded by it, and maybe you've hit a guardrail. If the guardrail wasn't there, you might have gone right over the precipice. It's the same in life. When a young person decides, I'm going to put this together, it's going to be God's principles, and I'm going to have those guardrails. And when those difficult choices come my way, I'm not going over a precipice. You know, I'm not going that way. I just want to share with you, he's an elder in the church. I showed his picture the first session Sunday. His name is Brother Moses Lamini. And you know, I love it when I'm with somebody who has a track record as far as serving God through the decades. And usually if I'm traveling in a car with him, I've always made this, you know, I've always tried to listen more than speak. To get, so we were heading about 5 hours into the low veld of Swaziland and from the mountains. And so he started talking about his life, and I just asked him, I said, well, tell me about your life. And then I just kept quiet. Boy, he had me captivated. He talked about going to school, and he said we had to walk 10 kilometers to school, and he said there was a river there, and during the rainy season it would flood, and up to a month we couldn't go to school, but the children on the other side of the river, they would go to school, you know, and we'd just have to play sort of catch up. He said when the river would finally get low enough, the parents would form chains where we students could cross the river. And then he went on to soccer, and he said I just love soccer. He said, do you know that sometimes the schools we played were like 15 kilometers away? You know, you're probably looking at about 8-7 miles away. He said, do you know, Brother Flynn, we would run there, play the game, and run back, and sometimes we would get home before the next day. I just laughed because I thought, that is totally out of my comprehension where we live, you know. And then he talked about his family. He said, you know, God has blessed me with a wonderful wife, and we have He says, we have three wonderful children. He says, we did have five. Had a daughter who was run over by a car coming home from school who was 8 years old, and had a son, 11 months old, to die of cholera. But he said, you know, the church was so good to us. And he said, our faith in God, it would not waver. And we held on to that, and we hold on today to that eternal reunion with our children. And I thought to myself, as I've reflected on preparing this lesson, I said, you, that man, he knows what values to live by. And what a blessing that elder is to that church there. For truly he can share all the difficulties of life, and yet he isn't hampered in any way. No grudges. You know, I think there is a certain problem that we have in our culture today, with some, not with all, is that everybody, well, that group wants to play the victim. Everybody's looking for something that they can, you know, the reason I am the way I am is because of my parents or my grandparents or this situation or this situation, not answering for themselves, you know. And we live in the wealthiest nation in the world. We have spiritual resources, emotional resources. We have financial resources, or, you know, all at our disposal. And woe is me with some people. The second degree of wisdom is knowing how to work. And what I mean by that, it carries with the word competence. You know, here I am a Christian. I'm living in this world that is changing. And, you know, first century Christians thought along this line, because they were certainly in the minority. And how to work? Well, what do you mean by that? I mean, let me give you an example. There could be a doctor that is a tremendous surgeon, but doesn't get along with the patients, doesn't get along with his fellow doctors or nurses. I mean, he loses his impact and influence because he might be competent in exactly what he does, but lacks that wisdom, that second tier of wisdom that is needed. Proverbs 22:29 says, do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings, and they will not serve before officials of low rank. You know what that means? That means that when I am competent and I am wise at the same time and got that going, people are going to promote me. They're going to recognize me. Do you know what? He's competent in his job, but boy, he can also get along with people. He's brought people along. He doesn't tear them down, you know? And I tell you what, we can make an impact in our society if we have that kind of wisdom. Not the fact that we can just do it all, that we know it all, but that we strengthen and we help others. There's also the third degree of wisdom, which is in-depth knowledge. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks and give careful attention to your herds, Proverbs says. And I just thought about people that know their surroundings. You know what makes a great coach? Oh, there are a lot of things, but one of the things that makes a great coach is when he doesn't have all the athletes, and when he knows how to fill positions to make a strong team. You know, that's what makes a strong coach. You know, we have people come with us from America on trips, and we will tell them, when you worship on Sunday mornings here, you have to wear a jacket and tie. And some have kind of looked at me, and I said, if you want to lose your influence, don't wear a jacket and tie. They will still smile at you and embrace you, but you will lose your impact. Know that. The second thing that we need to embrace is love. The Matthew 22:36-40, listen to what words. You want to put the Christianity in a nutshell? Now, I mean, besides the message that Jesus Christ, you know, that's the gospel, I understand that. But I'm talking about the everyday. Here it is right here. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, Matthew 22:36-40. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. I want you to know that I was moved by this, by these words of Dr. Martin Luther King years ago. You know, he was a tremendous speaker, and in the middle of the civil rights movement, he wrote these words. To our most bitter opponents, we say we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. bomb our homes and threaten our children, and we will still love you. Send your hoarded perpetrators of violence into our communities, and we will still love you. But know this, that we will never quit peace and love as we move to equality. Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor as you hate your enemy. But I tell you, well, you know what Jesus says, eh? That's a powerful tool for Christians throughout the ages, whether the culture is with us or whether the culture is against us. Embrace wisdom. Be wise. Yes, but bring love into that mix. You know, my motto at our junior school was overcome evil with good. I like that motto, and it's stuck with me through the years, Romans 12:21. And our role is to display the grace and the love of God. I mentioned Sunday about Brother Austin Vimber, who passed away, and recently a fine preacher of the gospel. And at his funeral, I mentioned there was over 3,000 people there because he had made such an impact in the different communities. In his lifetime, he established over 60 churches. But one reason that so many people were there that day was, I know of one instance where a man in the church just really was just jealous of him. Because he was loved and beloved, and you know it, and this man fell on hard times, and his daughter was about to be married, and one of the big things in marriage is marriage ceremony in Africa is big, and one of the big things is you have to feed everybody. I mean, they have a full meal, so it usually takes a whole cow, you know, to feed everybody. And so 4 days before the wedding, Brother Austin went and got one of his cows. We're talking probably about $800 or so at the time, what it was worth, and took it to that man. Needless to say, that man loved Brother Austin and just wept at his funeral. Embrace gratitude. Might not sound like something we would say when we're talking about fighting the, you know, and being soldiers of the cross, but gratitude is so powerful. Evil will never leave the house of one who pays back evil for good. Do you know the difference between a human being and a dog? If you find a sick, abandoned, and hungry dog on the street, and you give it food, shelter, and medication, he will never bite you. As for the human, the story, I think, is a great illustration, isn't it? That sometimes when good things have been done us, we haven't had that attitude to live a life of gratitude and be thankful for everything that comes your way. Luke chapter 17, there is the lepers, isn't it? And only 10% came back and thanked the Lord for the healing. When we are thankful, our hearts are filled with gratitude, then we become people. I'm telling you, this is the absolute truth. When our hearts are filled with gratitude, we become people closer to God. Because we're taking on His nature. And just as we embrace His wisdom, embrace His love, we embrace His nature, and His nature, part of that is gratitude as far as we are concerned. Not only will we become closer to Him, I tell you what, the church will mean so much more to us. We get excited about the possibilities for our church family. When we are functioning at a high level like that, we get excited. I was sitting and having lunch with David Brasher yesterday, and David was talking about how unusual, I mean, it's not as usual today as it was in years gone by, but they have built a house and their children have grown up in that one house. He has had that one job, you know, and he said, I'm thankful for it, you know, all these years. And he said, I've gone to the same church, and I could see the fondness and the passion in his heart when he said that, you know. I would dare say, and I know David, that he has a heart, and gratitude is part of that. 2 Corinthians 9:6-7, and this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. I tell you, if you have a heart of gratitude, you are sowing, man. And it impacts our excitement and motivation in terms of results. We want the church to move forward. and we are always going to be a part of the core of the church. You know how a church grows and is strong? You know how you get a strong church? You expand the core of those people that are always volunteering and say, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of that. One final thought. Embrace sowing. It's called the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. And it is like a boomerang, man. You sow that and it comes back and the multiplication will blow your mind. You know, I just mentioning when I was at Main Street and here also, we were giving on how we're going to support the clinic and the high school that we're building. And I said, one way we're going to do it is through agriculture. And we had planted 45,000 tomato plants. Yes, not 4,500, 45,000. And we were reaping tomatoes. Now, you look over that field and that is a lot of tomato plants, you know. But the tomatoes, do you know that we were 70 boxes of tomatoes a day? Trucks were just coming in there and going out. The law of cause and effect. If you let a virus in, it'll multiply in the millions. Don't just stand there either, because you're not going to sow much. Don't be stagnant. Love isn't how you feel. It's what you do. And I tell you what, if we will do good, then we're going to be able to change a relative, a friend, a co-worker. A faithful person will be richly blessed. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 20. I think I might have shared this story before, but let me just share it once again, just because it's stayed with me all through the years. Dwight Fuqua is a friend of mine. He used to preach in Louisville, Kentucky. And he was at a preacher's luncheon. And one of the preachers, which was from one of the high-density areas, you know, in Louisville, a very tough area, got up and said, I need to tell a story today to all of you preachers. He says, I was on the interstate. In fact, I think that's not the interstate, but that Waterson or Waterway freeway they have there. And there was a young lady whose car had broke down. And he said, I just pulled over immediately, and he said it was a tire that had gone flat, and she didn't know how to change it, and so I helped her change her tire. He's sewing. He says, you know, I've told you about our building. You know, our building gets broken into, seems like, every other month, and we put burglar bars on it, we put this on it, we put nothing happens. But the girl went on her way, and the girl said, can I have your card, please, because I want my father to know that you have really helped me today. And he gave her the card, and he said it was about a week later, there was a knock at the door, and so he went there to unlock it, and he said he unlocked it, and a man and two men stood there, and they walked in, and he said he stepped back, and then this man walked in, and you could tell he was well-dressed, and he carried some clout. Is basically, these were his bodyguards. And he said, I want to thank you. And he called him the pastor. He said, I want you to know, this minister, that you helped my daughter on the freeway. And nothing will happen to your building from now on. So, I don't, you know. but that was it, you know. I mean, you know, some good. You never know how it will come your way. Or a faithful spouse. Sherry and I, this August, will celebrate 45 years. And I told her on Valentine's Day, I said, you know, it has been, God is so right and so true. You know, we said those vows on that day, and we have kept those vows. And sometimes, you know, we've had difficulties to face together. And, you know, I mean, it's just the way life is. And yet we never, ever said that the word divorce was going to come into our conversation. No matter how frustrated we might become, it would never be a part of our life. And I said, I'm so glad that we kept that vow and we kept that promise. And I said, yeah, after 45 years, we're still so in love. All the blessings that come from being a faithful friend, that all those things come our way and bless us. You know, when Sherry and I moved to Kentucky, that was when I graduated from Harding, was our first place to preach. And everybody had a garden, was out in the country, it was Christian County. And we said, we want to have a garden. I mean, we want to identify with everybody. Well, Brother Lyle came with his tractor. It was old Massey Ferguson tractor he came with, you know. And he said, how many rows you want? And we said, oh, man, we at least want five rows of tomatoes and, you know, cucumber, squash, as many rows, you know. And he said, are you sure? Yeah, we sure, you know. And that garden was massive, man, you know. And Sherry and I could not keep up with that garden at all once it went. It could not, you know. And then the church came. And they came and helped work that garden with us. And we had so many vegetables. But I tell you what, those brethren laughed in front of us and maybe behind us. I don't know. But it was a learning curve. But the point is, the wisdom of God, a body comes together, his church, in all these different places, and we sow, and we're going to reap. And sometimes the sowing I do might maybe get a little out of control. I don't know, but we have each other, don't we? No matter how the world changes, God has given his church. And we are blessed here in this part of the world to have so many congregations. We have each other, and let's embrace the wisdom of God, and let's embrace his love, and embrace the sowing that he wants us to do, and let's be people that are grateful of all the blessings that we have, and no matter the situation of our country right now, just be thankful of all the blessings this country gives us. One is the freedom to worship and the freedom to share Jesus Christ, and let's be thankful for that. If you're not a child of the